Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, two caveats at the beginning of this program. Two caveats walk into a bar. No, two caveats. One, I am sleep-deprived and jet-lagged, so if I doze off during this broadcast, please yell very loudly at your radio. I'll wake right up. I'll snap, too. Secondly, I don't have much truck with the upholding of ignorance as an admirable state of being. But today, if I do speak in ignorance at all, and I hope not to, I'm not fixing to, but if anything I say strikes you and you may be more knowledgeable because you may have a security clearance or something, I don't know. Do you? My ignorance is the proud product of the United States government, because we're talking about secret stuff today, and the president invited us to have a debate about all this, and of course the stuff that we're debating about is secret, so we can only debate about it in ignorance. So that's the plan. Anyway, maybe just everything we were told isn't true. The CIA, you remember when we were told about the drone strikes that we know who we're killing. We know what we're doing. We're targeting. They're surgical. Well, better get another surgeon. The CIA did not always know whom it was targeting and killing in drone strikes in Pakistan over a 14-month period. This was uncovered by NBC News this week, but kind of buried in the other secret stuff that came out. So I'm bringing your attention. I'm tugging your coat about it. About one of every four of those killed by drones in Pakistan between 2010 and 2011 were classified as, quote, other militants. The other militants label was used when the CIA could not determine the affiliation of those killed, prompting questions about how the agency could conclude they were a threat to national security. I think either it was their militancy or their otherness. The uncertainty appears to arise. This is because we learned last year some of the drone strikes are directly targeted at named and known individuals, and some are called signature strikes. We discussed this on this broadcast last year. Signature strikes are when, just based on activity or the presence of a lot of military-age males in a neighborhood, they decide, okay, enough of that. Picking targets based on the behavior and associates of the targets. A former White House official said the U.S. sometimes executes people based on, quote, circumstantial evidence, unquote. When they weren't described as other militants, the unknown were described as, quote, foreign fighters. Well, they're foreign. In some cases, U.S. officials seem unsure how many people died. Yet officials seem certain that however many people died and whoever they were, none of them were non-combatants. Of the approximately 600 people listed as killed in the documents seen by NBC, only one is described as a civilian, the wife or girlfriend of an al-Qaeda leader. But Micah Zenko, a former State Department policy advisor who is now a drone expert. Did you know that you could be that when you went to school? At the Council of Foreign Relations, says it was incredible to state that only one non-combatant was killed. It's just not believable, he said. Anyone who knows anything about how air power is used and deployed, civilians die. And individuals who engage in the operations know this, unquote. Okay. Enough about drones. Now, the two major secrets that are no longer secret as of this week. Leaks. Strange they came out in the same time, or almost the same time. One was Wednesday in the Guardian newspaper in Britain. The other was Friday in the Washington Post. The Guardian leak dealt with a court order issued in April that Verizon turn over all metadata. That is to say, phone numbers called from, phone numbers called to, location of the phones. The data that as one of the defenders of this policy said today, appears on your phone bill. But as far as I know, the phone company can't put me in jail yet. So this data being turned over to the National Security Agency, the super secret NSA. And Friday's release was about PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, the data gathering tool that was used to scoop up email chats, video, live chats from Internet service providers by the selfsame NSA. Now, the defenses of these, first of all, it's 5 minutes in again. When you decide that a ragtag group of other militants or foreign fighters is the enemy in a war against the superpower of the world, then, you know, it's wartime, and wartime stuff happens. Like Patriot Acts get passed by a Congress that doesn't even read them before they vote yay. So anyway, here we are. Defenders of these programs have said, among other things, that the PRISM program helped to foil the New York subway plot. But Ben Smith in BuzzFeed says that quoting British and American legal documents from 2010 and 2011, they appear to contradict the claim that PRISM was responsible for blowing that plot. This, according to Smith, appears to be the latest in a long line of attempts to defend secret programs by making, at best, misleading claims that they were central to stopping terror plots. The court documents don't exclude the possibility that PRISM was somehow employed in the Zazi case. Zazi was the alleged plotter of the New York City subway bombing that didn't happen. The documents show that old-fashioned police work, not data mining, was the tool that led counterterrorism agents to arrest Zazi. The public documents confirm doubts raised by the blogger Marcy Wheeler and the Associated Press's Adam Goldman and call into question the defense of PRISM first floated and by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers, who said PRISM had stopped a key terror plot. He said it again this morning on the Sunday Yak shows. When they say that the listening in, or the gathering of data, they weren't listening, was legal, who's listening? I'm not. The law in question is the Protect America Act, which was passed to fill some holes in the Patriot Act. It requires only that executive branch officials certify that there are reasonable procedures in place for ensuring that surveillance, quote, concerns, unquote, persons located outside the United States, and that foreign intelligence is a, quote, significant purpose of the program, unquote. This is because they're not supposed to be listening in on us. So if they just say that, then they can listen in on whomever they want to. A single certification could cover a broad program intercepting the communications of numerous individuals. There is no requirement for judicial review of individual surveillance targets within a certified program. Civil liberties groups warned that the vague requirements of the law and lack of oversight would give the government a green light to seek indiscriminate access to the private communications of Americans. They predicted the government would claim they needed unfettered access to domestic communications to be sure they'd gotten all relevant information about suspected terrorists. It now appears, according to the Washington Post, this is exactly what the government did. The report by Barton Gellman in Friday's Post suggests that the moment the PAA was the law of the land, the NSA started using it to obtain unfettered access to the servers of the nation's leading online services, your Microsofts, your Apples, your Googles, your Facebooks. To comply with the requirement that the government not target Americans, PRISM searches are reportedly, quote, designed to produce at least 51% confidence in a target's foreignness, unquote. That's the lowest conceivable standard. I got that much foreignness in me. PRISM training manuals reportedly instruct users at the NSA, that is, that if searches happen to turn up the private information of Americans, unquote, it's nothing, this is a quote, it's nothing to worry about. And this report from the Post adds that few members of Congress realized the breadth of the surveillance powers they were approving when they passed this law. That may be deliberate. That's called deniability when the leaks finally happen. Well, they didn't tell us. Meanwhile, all this, and the U.S. is saying, the government is saying, metadata. It's just phone numbers and times. It's nothing personal. They're not listening to your conversations. So let's hop in the time machine and go back to 2007 when the Bush administration was doing this. And then Senator Joseph Biden was appearing on the then CBS morning program with the then anchor, Harry Smith.
It's a little bit like, what would happen if the banks turned over all your checking records without your name, but gave the checking account number and every single purchase you made and pattern of your behavior, and then you were told, don't worry, that's not an invasion of your privacy.
Well, the president, though, said yesterday, we're not listening to the phone calls, we're just looking for patterns.
Harry, I don't have to listen to your phone calls to know what you're doing. If I know every single phone call you made, I'm able to determine every single person you talk to. I can get a pattern about your life that is very, very intrusive. And the real question here is, what do they do with this information that they collect that does not have anything to do with Al-Qaeda?
By the way, that's Joe Biden back when he cared. By the way, last time I looked, the FBI had tracked two of the 9/11 terrorists. There just wasn't communication between the FBI and the CIA and other enforcement arms. So to fix that, they got to listen in on us. Hello, welcome to the show.
Venice, I'll be a menace in your Italian motel.
from just off of Leicester Square in London, England. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. This is high-tech meets low-tech, if ever there was, because stuff didn't quite work as planned today. So this is an iPad being held up to a microphone to let you hear news of the Olympic movement. I think it sounds better that way. Trashier, you know? A recently built stadium that will be used at the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro will be closed for 18 months while the roof is repaired. A committee of engineers said it had found a number of problems, including broken and twisted supports in the João Avelange Stadium, which was closed in March after it emerged that the roof could collapse in high winds. The report further said that the stadium was opened only 6 years ago at a cost of about $200 million for the Pan American Games, with the Rio authorities seeing it as a legacy project for the city. However, a team of engineers concluded in a report that the project for the construction of the stadium had presented structural errors from the start. So it wasn't a mistake. According to one of the engineers, there's a need to reinforce the roof's structure so the stadium can be used. But Brazilian Olympic organizers say they are confident the venue will be ready in time for the Games. This announcement comes soon after a stadium in northern Brazil, which will also be used for this Rio Olympics, suffered a partial collapse of its roof. Maybe attend the open-air events. What do you think? That Avalanche Stadium in Rio might not be named after the once powerful former president of the World Football Federation, João Avalanche, by the time of the Games. That's according to a candidate for the presidency of the International Olympic Committee. Rio politicians have presented a bill requesting a name change after an ethics report in the Football Federation said the longtime IOC member Avalanche, now 97, had taken bribes. Somebody gave him some longevity. IOC Vice President Thomas Bach said any stadium name needs to be in line with the IOC's ethics policy. Zero tolerance against doping, corruption, and any kind of manipulation. Yeah, well, we see how that works. Dateline St. Petersburg, Russia. Russian President Vladimir Putin has jokingly compared the unveiled design of the official torch for the 2014 Winter Olympic Games to a Kalashnikov rifle. No matter what they do in Russia, it turns out looking like a Kalashnikov, Putin said at the Games torch unveiling ceremony in St. Petersburg. The joke drew a chuckle and a big smile from visiting IOC President Jacques Roger. The Belgian was later seen performing a motion with his hands as if he was loading and firing a rifle. It's all good fun. But as much as $30 billion has been stolen in preparations for the Sochi Winter Olympics, according to Russian opposition leaders. Boris Nemtsov and Leonid Martinyuk say the games are a monstrous scam and will be the most expensive in history, costing more than $50 billion. A lack of fair competition and secrecy sharply increased the cost, benefiting only businessmen close to President Putin, they say in a report. Moscow has not yet responded to the claim, but I'd be buying polonium stock if I were you. The Olympics, it's a movement, and we all need one every day. Wow, my arm was tired from holding that up. Your arm doesn't get tired when you just push buttons. It's the old kind of radio, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so some non-secret stuff. News of the new F-bomb. Thousands of New Yorkers have likely been... This is I interrupted myself just to make a point that you will recognize the name of this bank in this story. It's the same one that was fined $2 billion by the United States for money laundering or violating money laundering statutes and aiding and abetting the money laundering of drug traffickers and terrorists. The bank is HSBC. They still have ads all over the jetways as you get off the planes here in London. Because they're good people. Anyway, thousands of New Yorkers have likely been denied a better chance to get their homes out from under foreclosure by HSBC and its Depew Mortgage Operations subsidiary. Depew! Well, that's fair warning right there. This is the thrust of a lawsuit filed this week by New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. He must be running for something. The legal action, unveiled in a news conference in Buffalo, accuses the banking giant of illegally ignoring a New York State law designed to get homeowners and banks into settlement talks to resolve foreclosure cases. Maybe without people losing their homes, you think? Put simply, according to the lawsuit obtained by the Buffalo News, HSBC's illegal business practices make it more likely that homeowners will unnecessarily lose their homes. More of that. The Attorney General's Buffalo field office. Man, you go to law school and you end up in the Buffalo field office. Think of it. They found more than 200 cases just in Erie County in which the bank ignored a state law to move delinquent mortgage holders into settlement talks to avoid foreclosure. In 9 cases, HSBC filed required paperwork, but filed it more than 900 days late. Schneiderman said an Office of Court Administration report last year found 25,000 New York homeowners are in what he called a shadow docket, in which a lender has begun foreclosure proceedings without going through the process to try to resolve the financial issues with a settlement conference. They were too busy money laundering. Banks are getting tens of millions of taxpayer dollars through a key foreclosure prevention program to pay down borrower debt, but they're using the money to pay off their own attorney's fees and other costs associated with taking back people's homes. In Florida, the more than $1 billion hardest hit program has been operating for 2 years, awarding struggling borrowers 12 months of mortgage payments to help bring a mortgage current. Some homeowners exiting the program are finding themselves still in debt and on the same path to foreclosure after their lender subtracted legal costs from the stipend they're supposed to get from the hardest hit program. The hardest hit program does allow lenders to use the money to pay their attorney fees and out-of-pocket expenses, but the federal law that authorized the plan does not allow homeowners to do the same thing. So next time you're born, be born as a bank. The new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, foreclosure. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Back to the secrecy stuff. Who doesn't buy the explanation that PRISM is harmless and is just a way of chasing bad people? Well, how about Tim Berners-Lee, the inventor of the Internet, inventor of the World Wide Web, actually? In a statement about PRISM, he said, "Today's revelations are deeply concerning. Unwarranted government surveillance is an intrusion on basic human rights that threatens the very foundations of a democratic society." He adds, "I call on all web users to demand better legal protection and due process safeguards for the privacy of their online communications, including their right to be informed when someone requests or stores their data. A store of this information about each person is a huge liability. Whom would you trust to decide when to access it or even to keep it secure?" Well, he used the correct pronoun, and he raises the same question in a way that Joe Biden raised way back in 2007. Good reason. Now, Dateline Washington, because there's going to be an investigation into who leaked the reports of the phone metadata records intrusion and the PRISM plan. Who leaked that stuff? We got to get rid of it. We got to get to the bottom of these leaks of top-secret classified material. Well, sir, Agence France-Presse reports, a Pentagon investigation says ex-CIA director Leon Panetta spilled secret details to a Hollywood screenwriter behind the film Zero Dark Thirty. The findings of the Pentagon's inspector general are contained in a draft report that has not been publicly released, but was obtained by the Project on Government Oversight, an independent watchdog group. The Pentagon Inspector General report appears to have been completed months ago, but the release has been repeatedly delayed, raising concerns the timing has been subject to political considerations. According to Pogo, quoting an unnamed official inside the Inspector General's office, the Inspector General found that Panetta, then CIA director, had disclosed the top secret information 2 years ago at a ceremony at the spy agency's headquarters, honoring those who took part in the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. The event was attended by a, quote, Hollywood executive, unquote, and screenwriter Mark Bowl, who was working on the movie Zero Dark Thirty. Quote, during this award ceremony, director Panetta specifically recognized the unit that conducted the raid and identified the ground commander by name, according to the draft of the inspector general's report. According to the DOD Office of Security Review, that's the Defense Department, the individual's name is protected from public release under federal law. The Pentagon declined to comment on the article. Because it's secret. And this is not secret, but some folks want it to be. Pregnant women are being advised to avoid chemicals in household products such as food packaging, cosmetics, and family medicines that could cause harm to their unborn babies. This is in England, not in the United States. The Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists said women should be made aware of the sources of chemicals to minimize the possibility of harm during pregnancy and urges them to play it safe, despite uncertainty about chemicals' effects and surrounding risks. The advice has provoked concern. Critics say the report is alarmist and can add to a mother's stress. In its scientific impact paper, the RCOG says there is no official antenatal advice for women who are pregnant or breastfeeding about the potential risks exposure to some chemicals could pose to their babies. The report's authors acknowledge that while there is little evidence to suggest whether such chemicals do affect a baby's development, they advise women to assume that a risk is present. Women can be exposed to hundreds of chemicals at low levels through food packaging, household products, over-the-counter medicines, and cosmetics, it says. It advises women to take care when handling moisturizers, sunscreens, and shower gels, as current regulations do not require manufacturers to name all potentially harmful chemicals when used in low dose on the product label. It recommends that pregnant women use fresh food whenever possible. How about the rest of us? Well, you want to protect yourself, get pregnant, I guess. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Throw away the thing that tells you not to throw the thing away. You'll forget to rue the day you went ahead and threw the thing away. 9 secret steps to the key to the door that you'll throw in the well and let go of all your thwarted dreams and visions of success. Amputate the thought that says you shouldn't ever amputate a thought. You'll be overwrought until you go ahead and amputate the thought. 9 secret steps to unlock the potential to forgo the knowledge of what can be attained as long as nothing's ever gained. I can't tell you what's in secret step 5. You will know when you're no longer alive. In you. Steps to the key to the door that you'll throw in the well and let go of all your thwarted dreams. Let go of all your thwarted dreams. Let go of all your thwarted dreams.
sound you can't even hear. This is the courtroom where the defense always rests. These are the judges who almost always say yes. This is the secret court. It's non-stop action, set against the backdrop of today's turbulent world, where anyone can be an enemy, and romance is just a secret order away. Seems like these are just part of what makes Secret Court TV's hottest summertime show. Make a date, because we'll be watching you. Secret Court, coming soon to your TV, whether you turn it on or not. Secret Court. The only thing we didn't redact was the set.
Based on the actual FISA court, which is secret, and where only the government attorneys are allowed to be present. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Rupert Murdoch has launched an emotional defense of his media empire, admitting he made spectacular mistakes in the past, but would be relentless as he makes amends in the future. It's nice, relentlessness. He told investors in New York his conglomerate was underdeveloped and undervalued. You may be wondering why I want to do it all over again, he says, because his empire has been split into a newspaper publishing company and the one that makes the money. I've been given an extraordinary opportunity most people never get in their lifetime, the chance to do it all over again, he said. Uh-oh. They're going to hack people's phones again? I'm not saying I didn't make many mistakes along the way, even some spectacular ones, Murdoch said. I don't think he identified which those were, however. But, you know, apologizing is, I think the time for him to apologize has passed. I'm not sure about that.
I'm sorry. I take that back.
Okay. Well, then then I take that back. And the new logo for 21st Century Fox, the new News Corp, will adopt a logo based on the handwriting of Rupert Murdoch and his father, says the article. Do they have the same handwriting? Did they combine them somehow? Or is that just to make sure that you can't sign a check with his name? Not known, ladies and gentlemen, not known at this time. And now,
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Time for the initial sows. This thing is spreading, and there's no stopping it. Although we're trying. So this week, see? Now that's a conclusionary so. But these are people who just start out saying so. That's the start of their answer, or they're in our first example this week. Their talk, their prepared remarks. Our second example comes from a listener in Philadelphia to our fine public radio affiliate there. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some interview answers or some speechifying. Beginning, as always, with the magic word, so.
Please join me in welcoming Jaron Lanier to the JCCSF.
So what's going on this morning at the scene?
So we are actually waiting. The mayor, Mayor Michael Nutter, is expected to have a press conference at any point.
Was everything in order as far as permits and all of that are concerned?
So yes, as far as we know.
Tell us what you know about Campbell Construction.
Sure, right. So the contractor, according to city records, he did have a past.
Even if the paperwork is okay, does anybody do any checking, or is that something that now is on the table?
Mm-hmm. So that is one thing that seems like as we move forward, as we learn more about the process and, you know, what sort of vetting goes on, what sort of vetting does not go on.
Do we know whether LNI is required to keep an eye on these demolitions to inspect the process as it's ongoing?
So LNI does make sure that events like this that are going on are conducted properly.
What do we know at this point about the owner of that building?
So there are a lot of questions about the owner.
What can you tell us about the victims in this case?
So of the more than one dozen people who went to the hospital, it's actually quite remarkable.
Describe for us, Liz, the scene when you got there yesterday. What was it like?
So right when it happened, I was actually across the street.
Not literally across the street, actually across the street. Anyway, our initial shows, ladies and gentlemen, they multiply like rabbits. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
But not with the same gusto the rabbits do. Jeffrey F. Miller, a visiting professor at New York University's Stern School of Business, as opposed to their silly school of business across the street, has apologized after inciting a furor, or as they call it in Britain, a furore, by suggesting that obese PhD students lack the willpower to finish a dissertation. In a tweet last Sunday he deleted after sending, Miller wrote, "Dear obese PhD applicants, if you don't have the willpower to stop eating carbs, you won't have the willpower to do a dissertation. Truth." His tweet sent off a torrent of public criticism. A journalism professor at NYU, Jay Rosen, called the comments astonishing. Miller, who's visiting NYU from the University of New Mexico, New Mexico has a university, apologized for what he called his, quote, idiotic, impulsive, and badly judged tweet, unquote. He added that his comment, quote, does not represent the selection policies of any university or my own selection criteria, unquote. Or my own thinking, you might add. If it was thinking. In a written statement, the University of New Mexico said it was deeply concerned about the impact of Miller's comment, which it said in no way reflects the policies or admission standards of UNM. The chair of its psychology department has contacted Miller about the incident. Quote, he told her that his comment on Twitter was part of a research project, the university statement said. We are looking into the validity of this assertion and we'll take appropriate measures. Britain's Got Talent suffered a security lapse this week after a woman managed to make her way onto the stage and pelt Simon Cowell with eggs. A carton of eggs. Yes, the eggs factor. No, that's not my original thing. Opera singers Richard and Adam Johnson were approaching the climax of their performance of To Dream the Impossible Dream when the smartly dressed woman walked out from behind the chorus line and launched her attack. The production team of the program confirmed the woman who threw the eggs was Natalie Holt, 30, a member of the Welsh singer's backing group, who was said to have been turned down for last year's Britain's Got Talent. In a statement issued by the show spokesman, she said, quote, I want to apologize to Richard and Adam for overshadowing their performance. I've never done anything like this before, and in hindsight, I've realized it was a silly thing to do. Besides, I need the eggs. No, she didn't say that. Mark O'Meara, head attorney on the defense team for George Zimmerman Jr., who goes on trial tomorrow for the shooting of Trayvon Martin, apologized. Mark O'Meara, the lead attorney on the defense team for Zimmerman, apologized for mischaracterizing video evidence his team claimed to have in a pretrial hearing last week. O'Meara and the Zimmerman team claimed that it had three videotapes and two in which Martin refereed fights between other teams and one that was allegedly filmed by Martin showing two of Martin's close associates assaulting a homeless man. But the defense team posted a statement revealing the footage in question actually showed two homeless guys fighting each other over a bike. O'Meara and the defense team apologized, saying that they had, quote, misstated the nature of the footage. Ohio State University President E. Gordon Gee, doing a lot of apologizing these days. Among the recipients of an I'm sorry is Wisconsin. He apologized to Notre Dame last week. Now he's apologized to Wisconsin Athletic Director Barry Alvarez. Gee had said Alvarez didn't like former Wisconsin football coach Brett Bielema and thought Bielema was a thug. Alvarez says Gee called him and apologized. And now the university has announced the resignation of former President E. Gordon Gee. Too many apologize. Too much apologizing, baby. Can't handle it. He's also, for many years, the highest paid public university president in America. You don't get there by apologizing. I guess he did. Downton Abbey's Dan Stevens has apologized for his character's death during the Christmas special, saying, "I am sorry about that." Speaking to a British magazine, the 30-year-old star went on to say, "I think what emerged is that it's an unwritten rule that you're not supposed to die on British television on Christmas Day, and that specifically was not my doing. I didn't have any say in the manner in which he went. It was in the hands of the producers." I hear that, babe. I've been there. Dateline Istanbul, Turkey's deputy prime minister apologized on Tuesday for the excessive violence used by the police last week against demonstrators opposing the razing of an Istanbul park. And Indiana Pacers center Roy Hibbert apologized after using a homophobic slang term during a televised news conference following Indiana's 91-77 victory over Miami in Game 6 of the Eastern Conference NBA Finals, which series Indiana lost in Game 7. Quote, "I'm apologizing for insensitive remarks made during the postgame press conference," said Hibbert in a statement. "They were disrespectful and offensive and not a reflection of my personal views. I used a slang term that is not appropriate in any setting, public or private, and the language I use definitely has no place in a public forum, especially over live television. I apologize to those whom I have offended, to our fans, and to the Pacers organization. I sincerely," boy, this lawyer gets paid by the word. "The apologies..." Not really that bad. Well, it was that bad, what he said, but not what you think. It was bad. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And so, it's a conclusionary one. We've been talking about secrecy here on the broadcast. And one comes to the point where one confronts the fact, as is made clear by the Biden tape earlier in the broadcast, that there seems to be more continuity between the previous and current administrations than discontinuity. And to explain that, we may have to go subterranean.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who was just an enhanced heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential,
confidential, confidential, confidential.
Not to get too poetic about it, but the appearance of summer brings a spring to my step, a smirk to my lips, and a lightness to my pacemaker. At our Wyoming retreat, it's not just the bees and the poisonous wasps that are buzzing. The recruiting sheets are going out to help find me some new hunting companions. Lynn has been hard at work in the kitchen, trying out a potatoless potato salad. And I have been savoring the most poetic thing of all, a little item called poetic justice. Oh, I'm not the kind of sap that thinks there's actually something called justice in this tired and dangerous world. Or is it just me that's tired and dangerous? But let's just put it this way. When this particular worm turned, it didn't just rotate. It did a triple axle worthy of Nancy Kerrigan before the knee thing. It all started one night a few years back when I had just left the original secure and disclosed location after spending 8 years trying to build, for my constituent in chief, a robust program of enhanced surveillance techniques. A new guy was in office, a fellow by the name of Obama. And he was indeed a little convincing that where enhanced surveillance techniques are concerned, there is no such thing as no for an answer. Early February 2009, 10:17 a.m.
Well, Mr. Cheney, you're always welcome in my White House. I've got 15 minutes. What's on your mind?
Mr. President, obviously we were on opposite sides during the recent campaign. But I'm sure something's become clear to you since you took the oath, if for no other reason than the need to make sure the banks don't collapse like a whorehouse in a hailstorm. But there is only one side.
Well, you know, it has come to my attention that there are more constraints in place than I possibly had anticipated.
Well, sir, in all due respect, If the constraints were advertised, a lot fewer fine people like you might seek the office in the first place.
I see your point. But I've only got 14 minutes now, so...
Yeah, you've got detainee camps to close, I'll bet.
Not so much.
No. These things are harder to close than a starlet's legs.
Okay, fine. But...
Mr. President, I'm going to do you the honor of referring to you by that honorific.
I'm honored.
But I'm hearing some chatter from my friends in the security community that you may actually be thinking of de-robusting and unenhancing some of our robust enhanced surveillance programs. Programs whose names I can't even utter because I don't know for a fact whether or not you've been read in.
Now, you've just wasted 20 seconds being silly, as you know darn well. From day one, I've been the recipient of the daily brief from the intelligence community, as well as multiple conversations daily with some of the senior folks in that community. So, if there was anything I didn't know by now...
Yes, sir.
That could only be because...
Yes, sir.
Okay. I got another 15 minutes.
This shouldn't take that long. Unless you get some funny ideas. You know, I'm not a particularly avid admirer of... funny ideas.
No funny ideas. I'm even going to put a temporary hold on serious ideas.
Splendid. Now let me read you in on a few things. Maybe you haven't come to appreciate the constitutionally limited power you hold in those long-fingered hands. Now, of course, you remember the Choom Gang?
Everybody who's read my book knows I smoked pot with some buddies in high school, Dick.
Yeah. But have they seen these photographs of some of your antics while under the influence?
Well, there were no photo. These are amazing.
Just a little secure, undisclosed lab. Forensically pristine. Mm-hmm. Like to examine them more closely? I happen to have a loop.
But we didn't do any of this stuff. Who?
Ray the Dealer.
Ray the Dealer. Yeah.
Guess you heard he had a kind of unfortunate passing.
Yeah, the thing with the ball-peen hammer.
They are briefing you well.
Look, Dick, let's be the grown-ups in the room about this thing. There are things you guys did with surveillance and data gathering and so forth that I have denounced and criticized at great length, and you know how I'd be regarded if I just did a 180 and decided to continue those programs?
Yes, sir. As a national hero.
Maybe so by your folks on the right. But some of us think the Fourth Amendment might deserve almost as much respect as, say, an amendment that's probably your favorite, the Second.
Interesting you bring up the Fourth. Funny thing about it, if we hadn't stretched its confines a little bit, we wouldn't even know that a secret part of this government has custody of these. Don't worry. These are third-generation hard copies. The originals are in encrypted data form in a low-tax jurisdiction.
No big deal here. All it says is that Goldman Sachs gave a big contribution to my election campaign.
Probably didn't have the time to check the... footnote on page 3, that they also bought 50,000 copies of your last book. That must have put quite a dent in the bestseller list.
Look, Dick, my time really is getting short. Well, that was a gift from President Sarkozy.
I know. Its time just ran out. Look, I've just shown you the stuff that I can tell you about. Believe me, and I speak as a friend.
You're not my friend.
I didn't say that, but I'm a friend.
Of somebody's.
That's correct. And believe me, there are an awful lot of people who've put their lives and their careers and their reputations on the line for robust enhanced surveillance techniques. Me, I'm out of office. I couldn't care less if the country gets sucked down the drain hole of history. But those folks do. And they just might decide to retaliate against the man who destroyed the most powerful tool to enhance American security since the nuclear-tipped cattle prod, and their way of retaliating might result in the unfortunate release of what you might call a tsunami of dirt about a certain president. I don't know about you, but in this toxic political environment, I'd hate to see that happen.
I won't see Sarkozy again until June.
Sir?
Yeah. Well, the way I'm coming to see it, any decision I might make to affect the robustness of the enhancement...
Or the enhancement of the robustness...
Right. ...might endanger the future of my entire presidency.
Something that millions of people have attached great hope to.
That's right.
Which, of course, is their problem, but still...
And who am I to extinguish their hope just for the sake of theoretical consistency...
About a program most of them don't even know exists.
That's a good point. And if down the line I change my mind about the balance between privacy and security?
I don't think that's going to be able to happen, sir.
Oh?
Not after you've been read in. Well, sir, I won't take up any more of your time. As I recall, this bookshelf provides for a secure undisclosed exit.
I believe we've had that capability removed.
According to my information, it still works. Have a nice administration. So, he knew he'd be leaked against if he ended the program. I guess it was somebody else's job to warn him he'd be leaked against if he didn't end it. End a partial diary for the beginning of June 2013. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential, confidential, confidential.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet.
He's our friend.
Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Clean, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie is on a well-deserved vacation to Portugal. Dateline Seoul, South Korea. That nation this week fired the head of the state-run company that oversees the country's 23 nuclear reactors. Why? A forged documentation scandal, that's all. It has shut a host of those reactors down. Korea Hydro and nuclear power president Kim Kyung-seop was dismissed from his post for the scandal involving parts provided with fake safety certificates, according to the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Energy. It added that the CEO of KEPCO, not TEPCO, KEPCO, as in K as in Korean, which is responsible for nuclear power plant design and technology, will also be fired. The ministry vowed stern punitive action against any senior officials of the two companies if they were found involved in the scandal. President Park Geun-hye demanded action over what she called unpardonable corruption in the nuclear power industries. State prosecutors have launched an extensive probe into the case, which forced the shutdown of two reactors in May and delayed the scheduled start of operations at two more. The Tennessee Valley Authority, federally owned corporation, already facing the threat of being sold as it carries $25 billion in debt, just under the limit set by Congress, is facing increased oversight after having been found to have improperly assessed safety violations at two of its nuclear power plants. It owns and operates Browns Ferry, Sequoia, and Watts Bar nuclear power plants, all of which are operating under notices of safety violations. This week, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission put the Sequoia plant and Watts Bar on increased oversight after determining that TVA violated nuclear safety standards in how the utility analyzed and prepared its flood assessment risks at the two power plants, both of which are located on the Tennessee River. The government punishing the government. The federal government has notified officials in Washington and Oregon that it is at serious risk of missing two cleanup deadlines at the nation's most contaminated nuclear site, the Hanford site, marking a potential new round of setbacks for the struggling cleanup there, where we built our plutonium stockpile. The governor of Washington expressed disappointment with the latest delays at the Hanford nuclear reservation. Dateline South Korea, if he could turn the clock back, Naoto Kan says he would never have promoted the export of Japanese nuclear plant technology. Kan's tenure as prime minister was defined by his handling of the March 2011 earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster. He professed embarrassment this week at having pushed the policy of exporting Japanese nuclear tech. This was the first time Kan had spoken about the experience to an overseas audience. "I'm now embarrassed," he says, "for having promoted nuclear technology." The fate of the troubled San Onofre nuclear plant in California, Southern California, was sealed last month, apparently, when it became clear a potential lengthy series of hearings would likely have to be held before the facility could be powered back up. The facility, which once supplied power to about 1.4 million homes in SoCal, has been closed for more than a year after a tube leaked a small amount of radioactive steam. On Friday, Edison International announced the facility would be retired. So the plant will be playing golf for the rest of its life. And following the announcement from TEPCO that the groundwater being stored at the damaged number one nuclear power station in Fuuk is more radioactive than previously thought, the company has now announced that radioactive water is leaking from the storage facilities as well. Cesium had been found in the groundwater at the plant on June 4th. That announcement raised doubts for many as to TEPCO's ability to manage the damaged plant. The discovery of a leaking groundwater-contaminated storage tank was made on June 5th, raising more concerns, except for the sunbathing atty, the atom. Our friend the atom, clean, cheap, safe, too weak to be. And news of the godly, a former Irish priest who is serving a 16-year sentence for the rape and abuse of schoolboys has had 15 months added to his sentence for abusing two other boys in the 70s and 80s. Tony Walsh, who was known as the singing priest, is due to have the entirety of his sentence reviewed in Ireland next month. The victims were aged between 10 and 11. The judge said he had worked his way into the confidence of families of the two victims with, quote, cold-blooded intent. But he was singing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over a secret network of stations that include the USN 440 cable system in Japan, NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America, the shortwave giant, WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 shortwave, the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and the currently locked down KCRW.com. Go to the news, all news feed over there. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com, available as a free podcast through Sideshow Networks, iTunes, and KCRW.com. And it'd be just like having everything be secret if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead and thanks to Adrian Bodnam here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast, except for helping my mouth move properly. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, just part of what's in store for you at harryshearer.com. There's a store there in store for you as well. And yes, I'm on Twitter, at the Harry Shearer. This broadcast will now be destroyed. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the locked down facilities of the Change is Hard Radio Network. So long from London.